Welcome to the Geek Geek Podcast, where we are at season 6 now. That seems really weird to me. I'm Void. I'm here with my co-host Beej.
Oh man, 6. That's awesome.
It's good. It's a good weird. Today we kind of have a mixed bag here. So obviously BJ had some stuff come up, so he didn't get the episode into the feed for Best of the Rest. So we're gonna just do your top 5 and kind of skip honorable mentions. And then I have a bunch of holiday geekery from, we basically took a month off between you being out for a little bit, and then we had a couple weeks planned for a break. So I just have this geekery that's been building up. So I'm not gonna get through nearly close to all of it this week, but I have a bunch of things that I'll start knocking down here, and then the rest I'll drag out over probably the next month.
Yeah, maybe even more than that, given the amount of things that you end up doing.
I did do a bunch over break. It was really nice to have time off for the first time since last year. COVID made for a very strange 2020.
Yeah, it did, especially with the way your job works and just the industry. It was nuts. So I'm glad to see that this year's starting without a whole lot of hitches, at least in that kind of regard for you.
Yeah. So I did want to do your Best of the Rest, because those are always some of our favorites of the year. And we didn't get to talk through it this year just because stuff came up on your end. And we don't have to dig into that. But I do want to know your top 5. And I know other people out there want to know your top 5. So let's do that for our main topic.
So the first thing that I had on mine, well, I guess the fifth thing that I had on mine, was the Extra Life charity. Like, I really wanted to mention that in the top 5 this year of just the favorite things that happened, because Elenzia organized this, and I know that Capsule J and Data Air and just a bunch of other people were involved in this as well. But for the first time, Geek to Geek team put together a I don't even want to know what it's called, like a fundraising goal, a collective goal, where we wanted to raise like $500. And Elenzia put it all together for streams and things like that. And we hit it this year. Like, the first time that we had ever done anything like that and tried to do any charity streams, it worked really, really, really well. And I am so excited to have been a part of something like that, because this is the first time as a network that we've put anything like that together to try to organize it. And like, Capsule J did a 10-hour Super Mario 64 marathon. We did 2 D&D live plays that we had streamed that are available on YouTube. And I'm trying to think. Elenzia did some 2-point hospital and stuff like that. But just as a team, over the course of it, we have such a good community that we were able to raise over $500 for Extra Life. And like, I can't not mention that, because it was so awesome.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's so cool. And it's awesome that it's like a community thing too that made it on your list.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the community this year, just in general, like, I really should say, like, the top 5 are people in general. Like, it's the community, both in terms of the expanded team and the people that we've grown from this podcast and others. And it has been nuts this year for the amount of growth that we had. The website itself, just the number of articles on the website and the traffic, grew 870% from within a 12-month period. Like, it was insane how much that part grew, and it's all the community. Like, it's, y'all are fantastic.
Yeah, that's crazy. Well, and your number 4 is like directly community related too.
It is. Like, another team thing was that Data Error found a Runkeeper Ekiden. I don't even know if I'm saying this correctly. It's a Japanese relay race that's the length of a marathon. Okay. And Runkeeper, because they everything got canceled last year. Races, marathons, the Tokyo Marathon, the Olympics got put off. Like, all of the major like sporting events that like we as a community tend to get into, They got canceled. And so Data Error found the Runkeeper World Ekiden in 2020. It's a relay race that you do virtual legs with people. And we put together a team. He put together a team. And we ended up doing that together, kind of being accountable to each other and making sure that we were able to train and get it done and run our legs. Like, it was between 5K and 10K each. And, you know, Data Error, me, Capsule J, Steph Flowers, and Troidal Power all did it. And we ended up doing the length. So I was really, really happy about that, because I did not end up training well enough and ended up having to walk mine instead of running most of it. And I'd signed up for a 10K. So it was not easy for me because I'm very out of shape right now, but I was like, I'm not letting this team down. Like, they put this together, they did this. And so it actually felt really good for all of us to finish doing that. So, like, the community is a big part of the things that worked this year. And I can't, like, it's awesome.
Yeah,
y'all are awesome.
Super cool.
And then number three for me was Mandalorian season two. Like, you probably have this somewhere in your
I do.
Your list. Like, you know, I don't listen to things. And
when I recorded mine, the season was still like midway through the season and I felt like it hadn't really kicked off. So I put it as an honorable mention. But, you know, it probably would have made it into my top five after it wrapped up because I really liked it after I think it was like episode four where it finally hooked me. And then all the way through the end of the season, I loved it.
Yeah, I can't remember if it was episode three or four that really hooked me, but because there were a couple where I was like, OK, this is good. I loved the first one. The second one was like, OK, I think the third one was with Frog Lady.
That sounds right.
And Jennifer latched onto Frog Lady. And I call her that, like, I think I mentioned this on the podcast before, like, she's billed as Frog Lady. Like, that's her name in the credits of of The Mandalorian. So, like, I liked that. And it was about episode four or five that really got me there. And the rest of the season was just phenomenal. It went away from what I wanted it to be a little bit. Like, it started being more Star Warsy Mandalorian than season one really was, but it was really, really, really good. Like, I love some of the stuff they did, and I'm excited to see what they're going to do in season three, but I really wish they had stuck a little bit more with the distance from the Skywalker saga and the mainline narrative that we know. I wanted them to do that. Maybe season three is getting back to that now that they've basically set up for spinoffs. I think is what season two had a lot of individual elements that let them set up for spinoffs.
They did a lot of spinoff setup, and then they did a lot of just, I don't know, I felt like it had to get to this at some point where it was going to tie back into the movies and the narrative that we know just because right. of the time period that it's in. So I knew it was going to happen at some point. I just wanted them to execute it well, and I think they did. I do agree with you that yes. I hope season three gets more into some of the like Mandalorian stuff, some of the Mandalore and Bo-Katan, and you know, there's directions they could go there that are less along the lines of the main Skywalker narrative, and I think that's probably for yep. the best. But you could tell that it was going to intersect with some of that storytelling at some point, and I'm really happy with how they did it.
And, like, I don't know how much of a spoilery thing, like, this will be, so, you know, forward 30 seconds if you even remotely don't want to know this, just passing thought, but I think that, I don't know if I've talked to you about this because of everything that's crazy going on, but I think Bo-Katan is going to be the villain in season three.
Ooh, that'd be interesting.
The way that they've shot her, if you go back and watch the finale, the way that they have shot her throughout the entire thing, the body language, the camera work, she's totally the villain. Like, by the time it got through again after I've rewatched it, I was like, yeah, that's what's happening in season three here, that that they're really going to play up that rivalry and make her be the antagonist.
Yeah.
And tying into all of that, like, my birthday was last Friday, and so, 38, I'm old now, but I woke up, and Jennifer always likes to make sure, no matter what, even if she orders something that doesn't come in yet, that we always have something to open on our birthdays, and so she asked me when I wanted my present, and I was like, yeah, now, and so I got out of bed, and she was standing in the hallway, and she just went, you have to fight me for the throne of Mandalore, and hit the button, and she got me a darksaber. Like, I didn't know they had made these toys, like the plastic lightsabers. They had made a darksaber, and so I had to run up and like punch her and take it from her to be able to get my present. So it's like she's awesome. So I thought that was really cool to tie into the Mandalorian. It's like I play with my darksaber all the time.
That's super cool. No, I'm glad you liked it so much. And I really liked the season by the end of it, even if I was a little unsure in the first couple episodes. But yeah, it was solid all the way through season two. One, I'm kind of surprised what made it to number two on your list. I would not have guessed that this was going to be on here.
I know. When I was thinking of through all of this, all the stuff that was going on, when I was like, to think about Marie Kondo here for a second, what actually brought joy to me this year? Like, very little joy existed in 2020 in most people's lives. And the last month of 2020 was awful. Like, we had so many family emergencies. You know, my father-in-law passed away right before Christmas. And so, like, we were living and going between their house in Tennessee in our house in Alabama, and like just everything, which is only about 30-35 minutes, so don't let me make that out to be worse than it is, but it was still, you know, a lot of driving multiple times a day. And one of the only things that could get me to smile and actually feel better was listening to the Adventure Zone while I drove. And I don't have a commute anymore. I haven't been going out and running like I did listening to it initially. But I put on the Adventure Zone because I knew all the time that this was something that made me happy before. And even during this like incredibly, incredibly dark time, the Adventure Zone was making me laugh. And I looked forward to being able to get in the car and drive, to be able to listen to the McElroys do whatever ridiculous things they were doing. And so now I couldn't not put it on there because I'm almost done with the balance arc. I have one more arc. I'm in that second lunar interlude that leads into the very final part. And so I'm really excited to see what's going on. But for the joy that it brought me and literally sometimes being the only highlight of a day, yeah, it's the second. It's number two for sure. And I've avoided actual play stuff for a long time. And the Adventure Zone is just too good not to listen to.
I'm glad you finally got into it. I knew if you could get over the first arc of it, you would get into it. I just didn't know when that was going to be. And it's like, it finally clicked for you.
Well, it had clicked before, but I stopped listening to it when I started. I think I started listening to The Wheel of Time is what did it. What made me stop is I got the audiobook of it, and I stopped in the Pedals to the Metal arc for Adventure Zone. And I think that's the third storyline they do, maybe. And
yeah,
it might
right.
be the second. But I stopped in the middle of it because that is my least favorite one that they did. And when I started back, I basically powered through it, and the rest of it has been phenomenal. Like, it is just so good. And I cannot wait to see what is happening in this last arc as they tie it up. And I have one question for you that you can tell me with, and it's not a spoilery thing.
Okay.
These characters that they're playing, don't tell me what happens to them. I do not want to know what happened to Merle, Taco, and Magnus, but I want to know, like, in the other storylines, are they continuing the world that they set up with the balance arc in these characters, or are they completely new, like, adventures and characters and worlds that they rolled up?
No, each season is a completely different like world, and they've changed systems a couple times, and it's new characters and stuff like that. So they do return to the same world for some of their live shows. So that's always cool to do like a one shot in it. So that balance world that they created, they do live shows there later.
Yeah, you said doo-doo.
Yeah, I did. They do live shows there, but that's about it after that arc.
Okay.
So it really does have a good ending to it. I'm being careful. Cool. That's why I'm talking slowly. I don't want to spoil anything.
Right. And that's why I was just curious, because I didn't know if they actually kept in that world or did other stuff, because I thought I'd remembered you telling me they tried different systems.
Yeah,
and
they do.
So I'm excited to see how they do with those, because actually part of this is loving the way he DMs. And so it'll be interesting to see how they tie that into different systems as well. So I like listening to learn. And so for me, number one this year, though, well, last year, I guess, the outside of the Adventure Zone bringing me joy at the end of the year, the highlight of my year started by being able to see Hamilton live on stage in Nashville.
Nice.
Like, it's hard to believe that was still 2020. It's hard to believe that was how the year started, because it really feels like, honestly, I know it's overdone, but it really feels like it was a couple of years ago before I was, you know, going to the theater and seeing Hamilton, like being in public and that crowded of a space. Like, it does honestly feel like it was longer than that, but it was just January, and that was the highlight. I mean, being able to finally see something that you got me into years ago that I love so much, and finally, like, it being one of the last times I would have had the opportunity for who knows how long, because now with Broadway and traveling shows and everything being so up in the air, there's no telling when I would be able to see it. So I'm very happy that I was able to get tickets and see Hamilton in Nashville at TPAC. Like, that was by far the best thing that happened last year.
Yeah, that does feel like a lifetime ago, but you're right. No, I'm glad that you got that in this year and it was still a highlight.
Yeah, like that was the highlight. You know, but honestly, you know, thinking about the Adventure Zone, just like I said, the happiness that it brought me, that one is still right up there. Like, I really almost put Hamilton at number two and the Adventure Zone as number one because of how happy it made me.
That's good. Right. I'm glad that both of them brought you such joy when you needed it. Yeah.
And then there's also, and I haven't played it, I just want to mention it, like, there's an Adventure Zone board game that just got released, like, last week.
Yeah, I saw that.
I bought the collector's edition of it because I was, you know, I saw it being announced like right, or at least going up for sale, like last sale or whatever it was before they released it by the company on Twitter. I was like, I love this thing, so I'm gonna play it, and it really looks like a fun game. I can't wait to get to play it. That's not part of, you know, my best things of the year, but I'm excited because it ties in.
You gotta let me know how it is once you play it, because if it's good, I will pick it up.
Yeah, for sure.
Cool. I have a bunch of geekery, but before that, don't forget, we're part of a network. We have podcasts, we have streamers, we have the geekery blog, like BJ mentioned in his Best of the Rest. All of that and more at geektogeekmedia.com, or you can go to geektogeekmedia.com/subscribe and get it sent to you, so you don't have to go to it. It's very convenient. And then don't forget, we have a digital magazine called Press Start, which I never know the latest, but you always do. What's going on with that?
We did a holiday issue last time. We kind of combined November and December into holiday memories of games and things like that. It was great. It started to come out right when everything in my world crashed. So Elenzia, Steve, Mr. Alarm, and Data Error and Troidal Power all just came together and put together a fantastic issue for everybody. So you can go to patreon.com/geektogeekcast and check that out. And then this month we're doing a like wellness and healthy games kind of thing on how games have helped us live better lives. So y'all check that out again at patreon.com/geektogeekcast.
Awesome. And that brings us to geekery. So I know you don't really have anything this week because, like you said, you've been busy dealing with lots of stuff.
Yeah.
I have tons. So I think I have three or four pages of holiday notes. I'm just going to talk for a little bit until I feel like I talk too much, and then we'll wrap up the show. So
that's fair.
I tried to order these of like the importance of timeliness of when I should get to them. So we'll see if that worked out. But to kick things off, I want to mention that Friends at the Table, it was one of my Best of the Rest things for this year, the Partisan season. Since that episode, since I recorded that, over break, I went back and I listened to literally the entire backlog of Friends at the Table, which is hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours of content. And I really like it. Partisan got me like in the headspace to enjoy them as a group and to understand the way that they are collaborative storytellers, not in the way that like most other live plays that I listen to, there's a GM or a DM and they're trying to get you through their story. And yeah, you have influence on the world, but you know, like the DM or the GM is really leading you through this world. And Friends at the Table doesn't do that. Like, yeah, Austin Walker, he has a world, but they just have this collaborative storytelling ethos at their core that they all just buy into it. And so it's not like listening to other live plays. And it took me so many seasons to get there. And I got there with Partisan, but once it clicked in my head, I was able to go back to the very beginning and listen to literally everything. So I've listened to the whole backlog now, and then I went and I supported their Patreon, and so now I'm getting their bonus feed, and I'm going back through all of that, which is more hundreds of hours, and I just love it. I think Friends at the Table is fantastic, and I love listening to it.
I'm really curious about this one, too, because I've started listening to Critical Role as well as the Adventure Zone. And part of it that I like on that one is and I do actually, I will say that I like the like Critical Role now for a couple of reasons. But one of the big things is the collaborative storytelling part of it. Like, it really is him opening it up and then him reacting, the GM reacting to what they're deciding to do with whatever it is. And so the way that you describe Friends at the Table, that might be something that I want to get into because of that element, because it's something I want to learn how to do as well. I'm super interested in it.
Yeah, it's really cool for that kind of thing. If you're interested in a good sample of that, they have something that they call the Road to Season 6. So Season 6 is Partisan, and they put this out in their main feed. They didn't do it for every season, but they put it in their main feed for Season 6 leading to Partisan. It might actually be labeled the Road to Partisan in that feed. And they play a series of one-shot games where they are working together to build the world before they ever play in the world. And that was one of the coolest things that I've listened to, because some of them are like these really focused, narrow stories that aren't even at the same place in the timeline, and other games that they play are these huge era encompassing, we're going to make the entire history and backstory of the world together. And it was just so cool to listen to all of that. And then when you listen to them while they're in the middle of a live play, they're really good at like handing it over to people. So like, if I'm thinking about not Partisan season, but one of the fantasy seasons, they have a character that's a bard who is from the archives. And anytime something comes up about the archives, the GM doesn't just say, okay, here's what happens, or here's who that character is, or here's what that looks like. He'll turn towards the character that's from the archives and say, what does that look like? Or what would that entail? Or what character is this? Like, they really give each other authorship in really interesting ways. So yeah, I'm just a huge fan of it at this point. So I just wanted to, I guess, fangirl out a little bit more before I drop that. Yeah.
And that's something that not every game or party would be able to do, is be able to throw it to one of the players and have them be able to create something on the fly like that, or have, you know, even talked about it previously. So that's something I'm really impressed by that they would be able to do.
Yeah, they're extremely impressive. So outside of listening to that, and I wanted to put that up front because I was kind of listening to that in the background while I was playing tons and tons of games. So here are some of the games. I went back to Astro's Playroom and I got a platinum on it. It's really fun. I think that game's great. You know, this is one of those things where in January, I always kind of second guess some of my placement for my games of the year list. I might have moved Astro's Playroom into the top five if I had played as much of it. Like, it was that good. The speed run, it's like time trials, those were really fun. They have these competitive activity cards for those, and I want them in more games now. It has to be a game that fits it. But like, seeing that, oh, hey, my friend just beat my time, or hey, I can hit one button from the PS5 dashboard and instantly be into this challenge, like trying to beat my previous time with like no loading time. It makes it frictionless, right? Like, all of these competitive bite-sized like competition things in the past, it was always, well, let me load up the game, let me sign into my thing, let me go into this mode that I need, let me go find the exact challenge. Like, it's just all this friction. And the activity cards on PS5 completely eliminate that friction and just get you right into the action of doing the challenge. And so there were a couple times where actually Austin and I went back and forth on the leaderboard for one or two of the different speedrun time trials. And I always love seeing when he beat my time, because I would be like, no, I'm going to go in there and beat him again. So I don't know if you knew that that was happening in the background, but I enjoyed that a lot.
I knew that he was doing the leaderboard stuff. I knew that he never mentioned that it was you specifically with stuff like that, but I knew that he was enjoying it so much that he actually did the same thing as you and ended up going and platinuming the thing. So I think it's hilarious that you both fell into it and literally were going head to head with it.
Oh yeah, it was great. Like, I would love more things like this from PlayStation or just on PS5. So we'll see in the future what they do. I think, you know, in hindsight, this probably would have been my number six game of the year. So probably not quite on my top five, but it would have been close, like a lot closer than I thought when I did my honorable mentions for the year. And then I went back and I played more Miles Morales, and I got platinum on that too. So I started my, you have to do an entire New Game Plus playthrough. So I didn't know if I would platinum it, but I started New Game Plus one afternoon and I literally did the entire second playthrough that afternoon. So it turns out, yeah, it turns out that the second playthrough on New Game Plus is actually pretty fast once you have end game abilities and if you just mainline the crit path, because I didn't need to see any of the side activities because I had done all of those. Like, I had 100% of the game already. So I just went through and I did the entire second playthrough of the game in one afternoon and got a platinum on it.
Wow, I didn't realize you had done it so quickly, like in one afternoon. I knew that you had told me you platinumed it, which I was like, oh my goodness, you went and did the New Game Plus, what? And so it was, I didn't realize it was one afternoon, but yeah, the game is fairly short if you just do that. So I'm glad to hear that, because it makes me more likely to go back and play it because of seeing it with Jennifer playing it. It's more likely for me to do it knowing that you can go through it fairly quickly.
Yeah, it was fun. I also checked out Rocket Arena, which was free on PS Plus, and it might still be right now, but it was for at least a month in there. It was more fun than I expected. You know, it has fairly simple mechanics, but I tried it because it was like free to play. And actually, I should ask, do you know what this game is?
I know vaguely what it is. I saw it, and I don't honestly remember. I think I snagged it, but I don't. I know that I didn't install it, but I think I put it on there because it was free.
So it is a third-person shooter, and it's like every projectile in the game is basically a rocket. So it's kind of like like rocket launchers used to be in like very old school games, you know, where they're slow traveling. You actually have time to react to them. But every character has rockets with different properties. So one of the guys I ended up liking has very big, slow rockets that hit super hard. But some people have super fast rockets that rapid fire, but they don't do a lot of damage. Or some people's just knock you back farther. And the way you get points in the game is not like depleting a health bar and knocking somebody out. You instead fill up their blast gauge. And once it gets full all the way, if you get one more hit on them, they will get knocked out of the arena and you'll get a point. So it's almost Smash Brothers in that way, where you're trying to knock them out of the level, except it's a third person shooter. So it's not like, even though it's rockets and even though it's like kind of competitive, it's totally family friendly. Like, my son and I sat down and played this game together for like an afternoon or maybe two afternoons in a row. And, you know, it was really good for like a free to play game. I don't think I would pay the whatever $30 it was at launch or whatever it is these days. I don't know if it's fully free to play or if you have to be on PS Plus or something to get it.
Yeah, I don't know.
But I did see it's on Game Pass also. So if you run into Rocket Arena and you see it on PS Plus for free or Game Pass for that you've already paid for, grab it and just check it out for like 15 minutes and you'll quickly be able to see what it is.
Yeah, that it sounds cool. It sounds like something that I would like to at least try out, because that's kind of what I did with Rocket League, with the cars, you know, the soccer with cars. Yeah. That I saw it like super cheap, and I'd seen Bobby 13th Story playing it a lot, and so I was like, I'll go ahead and try this. And it turns out that that's something that you can hop in and out of and have fun and then go do something else. That sounds what like Rocket Arena is as well, something that I would like doing like that.
Yeah, and you know, that's what I kind of found myself doing for a week or two, is I would play like one or two rounds of it and then I'd put it down for the day and do something else. But it was like a palate cleanser and it was really easy to jump into and out of, so that was cool. I put a bunch of time into Fuser, which I don't think I talked about at all. Like, I don't think I don't think so when we did our games of the year. This is another one that it probably wouldn't have made my top five, but it would have been just under it. This game is just, it's sweet. It's so cool. You know, you mix music on the fly and it always sounds good and amazing. And it's like, this is a game that literally feels like magic with how amazing it is at making the music that you put together sound good. You know, it's the same technology that they had from Drop Mix, that physical card game with the NFC chips, and you connect like a smart device to it.
I don't know that one, though.
Oh, okay. So it's Harmonix, right? It's the same people that did Guitar Hero and Rock Band and all of those games.
Okay.
Yeah. And so this one gives you four different like tracks, essentially, and you can grab four different pieces of audio from any song in the collection. So you could grab vocals from Smash Mouth, and you could grab like the drum beat from All Star, and you can grab, you know, Katy Perry's violin. This is literally something that I do. And you can like, you just grab different instruments from different songs that you know, and it will put them together, and it always sounds good somehow. Like, whatever music magic they're doing behind the scenes is just amazing. So it's like one of the coolest music games that I've ever seen. It feels like magic in a way that is just indescribable. And there's so much control over the music. If you want it, you know, you can change the BPM, you can change the key, or you can just be like me and hit the button that makes, that's like, hey, optimize these things because I don't know music the way that you do, right. Game Engine, and it will, and it'll make it sound better. And all of that is like, there's a whole campaign that I barely touched. I think I did the first like three or four like sections of it, or chapters, or I don't even remember how it's divided up, but I just spent hours and hours in freestyle mode. So I probably put like 20 hours into this game just messing around in freestyle. And in the end, the reason why I wouldn't crack my Games of the Year list, but that I still think is magical, is just that I don't know how much of this is like game versus it feels like a music like creation tool and less of a game to me. Does that make sense?
That's actually what I was going to ask. Yeah, that makes perfect sense, because I'm sitting here listening and I'm like, this sounds really awesome, but how is it a game? Like, yeah. I don't understand the gameplay, because I'm seeing in my mind, because I didn't actually look this one up when you said it like I usually do, it's I'm seeing like GarageBand and then listening to music. So like, what is the actual gameplay like, that, you know, the win-lose kind of thing?
So do your thing, Google it and watch a quick video while I'm talking like you normally do. So you can actually see the tracks and the way that it works. So the game part of it is you get points for, if you're in the campaign, you get points for doing different things. Often it's fulfilling a request. So maybe someone's like, oh, I want two different percussion lines in here. So you have to like make sure you have two sets of percussion out of your four tracks that are running. Sometimes somebody will say, hey, I want a pop song. You got to mix in a pop song, or I want a song from the 80s, and you have to fulfill their requests fast enough. And then the other thing is keeping a combo going by dropping it on the beat or dropping it on a good insert place for that track. And they show you as you're like holding them and like waiting to drop them, they show you when a good drop would be. And that part is gamified. But the thing is, that's in the main campaign. And the more I played of the main campaign, the more it made me want to just go do freestyle, because it's so much more fun to just find a cool song and mess with it. And the thing that kind of sucks about campaign and like the gamified portion of it is that you might just be fulfilling requests and kind of trying to keep up with it and get a combo going, but you'll find a really cool song, like a really cool mix, and you're like, this is awesome. And when you find that in freestyle, you can just kind of like sit there and enjoy it and like groove to it. And maybe you save it, maybe you take a snapshot, maybe you start tweaking things a little bit, but you can enjoy it. And when you're in campaign, you can't just sit and enjoy it, because there's always, oh, here's the next prompt, here's the next challenge, here's the next thing. So I don't actually think that it works super well as a game in the campaign, but I do think it is an amazing music creation tool.
Yeah, and the way that you were talking about it made me think like it was a DJ booth kind of thing, like the way that the, you know, mixing, that's exactly what it is. Like, I'm watching this and listening to it, and I'm like, yeah, this is neat. This is something that I would like to play myself, because just listening in the background, it's like they dropped some Lady Gaga in this video, had Billie Eilish, and then some Lizzo, and I'm like, man, I like this. And you're talking, I'm like, yeah, I don't. Yeah, let's do this. So I'm probably going to check that out sometime.
So I think it's a game that is going to stay installed on my computer probably forever, but it's not a game where I'm going to go and play the gaminess of it very often. It's just whenever I feel like I'm in a music mood and I want to go mess around with it, I'll spend an hour or two in it. So again, I think it's a better music experience and music creation tool than it is a game, but it's still magic in what it does. So Fuser definitely needs a shout out here. I played more Assassin's Creed Valhalla, and I beat the game. It's a really good podcast game, but I would not, even though I beat it. Okay, hang on. I should say this first. I put 83 hours into this game.
Like, okay, that's a lot.
It's a lot. And even after that, I beat the game. I'm nowhere close to platinum on that game. Nowhere close. It would probably take another 60 hours to platinum that game if I wanted to.
My goodness.
It is ridiculous. You know, and It does feel like the end of the Layla trilogy. She's like the main character outside of the Animus for the last two games and then this one. And it frees up the possibility space to do some new meta storylines in the future, which I like because I keep liking the meta narrative a lot of the time better than the actual narrative of like the characters in the game. I like the Animus stuff and the crazy alien things and the world destroying consequences and like, give me more of that. Like I like that kind of thing. But the game itself, it was on my honorable mentions for the year. And even after beating it, even after 83 hours with the game, it wouldn't make my top five if I were to go back and, you know, reassess it right now. And it's because it's fine. Like, it's fine. It's an Assassin's Creed game, and it's exactly what I expected. And it was perfect for zoning out and listening to audiobooks and listening to friends at the table. And I didn't really have to pay attention that much, except for some of the, like, main story scenes where I would pause my podcast. But, you know, this was a fantastic podcast game where I could just do it as a background activity and, like, you know, go and get all the map things. It's a map game through and through. So it's not bad. And I, you know, if it was someone's game of the year, I could see how it would be. Like, some people just love open world games, and sometimes the right setting or the right gameplay gets you. But for me, it kind of felt like, yep, it's another Assassin's Creed. It's exactly what I thought. No surprises. And that's not bad, but it just means that it wouldn't like crack the novelty for me to be a game of the year.
Yeah. Now, I can absolutely see that. I'm glad that it didn't turn out bad. Like, that's one of those things. I'm glad it didn't turn out a game like Red Dead Redemption 2, where you kept playing it and you kept playing it and you never had fun while you played it. And so I was kind of afraid that the way that you had talked about Valhalla, that might be where you landed with it. So I'm really glad that it wasn't another RDR 2.
No, and it wasn't. You know, and there were points of it where I really had a lot of fun with it, and there were points of it where I was like, yeah, I'm just kind of going through the motions. But overall, it was basically what I expected. And We still have a little bit of time, so I'll grab one more in here before we wrap up. Immortals Fenyx Rising, just because it kind of goes hand in hand with Valhalla. And it, this game, I don't know, man. Like, I am less impressed than I expected to be with Immortals Fenyx Rising. The core gameplay is what I expected. Like, it sits almost halfway between Assassin's Creed and Breath of the Wild, and I thought I would love it. Like, everything about this game told me that I would really like it, and I just don't. Like, it's a little too simple for me. It feels like it's, in a lot of ways, it feels, and I'm about to say something that makes it sound diminutive, but like, baby's first open world game, you know? And it's not for babies. That's not what I mean. But it's like a, it's an onboarding game to open worlds. You know, I think this would be a really good onboarding game if you've never tried an open world before, or for kids. Like, I could probably give this one to either of my kids and they would, you know, probably get onboarded into open worlds pretty well. It also didn't help that I wasn't a huge fan of the look and feel of the game, and especially coming off of some of the amazing looking like PS5 games that I've been playing, this just felt like the graphics were really simplified, like in a weird kind of low budget way. You know, when you do low budget graphics, but you stylize them and it makes it like this game's amazing, even though technically the graphics aren't up to stuff. This is like the opposite. Like, they had budget, but they just didn't style it. And it just, it looks worse than it should, in my eyes. And then
I could see that, but I liked the graphics of it. Like, I thought that the colorful, cartoony graphics worked for the game. But I absolutely see it being simple as an open world game. Like, the gameplay never grabbed me through the demo that I played, but I like the way the story is told.
Yeah, and I thought that the story would be cool because they have these two unreliable narrators and they go back and forth, and sometimes it radically shifts like what's going on in the middle of you doing it because the narrators disagree. And at the first hour or two, I was like, this is amazing, this is hilarious, I like this storytelling. And then by like hour three or four, I was like, this cuteness is extremely annoying and I'm starting to get frustrated with it as a storytelling mechanism. So it wore thin for me. And in the end, I think it's just that, like, it's not a bad game, but it's not for me. You know, I probably put 5 hours into it, and, like, I reserve the right to revisit the game later if the mood strikes me, maybe. But I don't know if I'm the target demographic or if there's something about this game that just doesn't click with me. But, yeah, it just ultimately didn't work for me.
And I'm kind of sad about that, and I'm also kind of like, Yeah, that makes sense. Both of them, because I could definitely see you liking this game, but I don't think there was any way it was ever going to be a top game of the year for you.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And then I'm not going to get into it yet because I am still in the middle of playing it, and I need to finish my thoughts before I bring it onto the podcast, but I don't want to end on a negative note. I didn't intend to do Immortals right at the end. So I will say that I'm playing Demon's Souls on PS5, the remaster, and right. I have never been into a Souls-like game as much as I'm into this one, and I finally see the appeal. And I'm probably, I don't know, 15 hours invested into the game, and I just love it. It is amazing, and I see it, and I get it, and that game is fantastic in a lot of ways. I need to spend a little bit more time with it, but I will report back in the next couple weeks here on Demon's Souls.
Yeah, because I'm really curious, because you've never really liked that kind of game before, so the fact that you've been texting me, like, this game is really fun, I like this, is really kind of messing with me.
Yeah, and I don't know if I'm going to finish this one. I don't know if I'm going to stick with it, but like every time I've walked away from a Dark Souls game or Bloodborne or Sekiro, I always felt like I wasted my time or I wasted my money, and I've walked away feeling right. bad. And right now where I'm at with Demon's Souls, I'm hitting the point where I don't know if I'm going to progress much further, but I finally see what appeals to people. I finally get the core loop to the game, and I have enjoyed my time and the challenge of it so much that I feel like I've finally had a breakthrough with like what people love about this type of game. So I need to get my thoughts together a little bit more than that before I report back, but I wanted to end on a positive note. So I will say Demon's Souls on PS5 is really, really good.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. I've heard nothing but good things about it. I know I don't like that kind of game. That's not the kind of game play that I like, but I've heard really good things about this one. So I'm glad to know that even for you that it was that good.
It was. It totally was. So, okay, there. I still have like 3.5 pages of geekery, but we'll keep picking away at that over the next month or so. That's probably it for tonight. You guys can write to us with comments, suggestions, or feedback. Our email address is geek2geekcast@gmail.com, or you can reach us on Twitter @geek2geekcast.
We also have great discussions on Slack and Discord. You can go to geek2geekmedia.com for invite links. And while you're there, make sure to check out all of the other content we have on the network, like blogs and video game reviews. And like we mentioned earlier, our digital magazine, Press Start.
And I would say there, too, especially because it's the first one of the season and a lot of people listen to these, we've moved more and more over to Discord. So if you are in Slack and you haven't looked at the Discord in a while, you might want to take a look because people are very active over there.
It's true. The Discord community has kind of blown up, and we were talking about that today. So, yeah, check it out. We're adding a lot of channels and doing a lot more stuff, even having weekly game groups for like Among Us on Steam. So check it out. And that's all organized through Discord.
Yeah. I blog at agreenmushroom.com, and you can find me @grnmushroom. That's green mushroom without the E's on Twitter. I'm also on the Disney Forever podcast, where we watch and react to a different Disney movie every week.
And I'm on Twitter as @ProfessorBeej. That's Beej with two E's. And I also co-host the Dragon Quest FM podcast, a show about the Square Enix RPG series.
We've been Void and Beej with your Geek to Geek podcast. That'll do it for this week. See you next week, geeks.
Man, 6 seasons. Woo!
When toxic culture has you down.
When you're just looking to laugh and have fun.
Kick back and enjoy watching a video game.
Or just make some new friends.
It's time to visit the Geek to Geek Media Network.
A community of podcasters, streamers, and bloggers.
Well, more of a family than a community.
All dedicated to geeking out about the things we love. Things like
video games.
Star Wars. Beep.
Comics.
Movies.
K-pop.
Disney Plus.
Keanu Reeves.
New.
Or whatever our community decides is the next best thing.
That's right. We have a great online community on Slack and Discord where we chat about our weekly geekery with listeners and viewers.
And each other.
Yep, and each other in real time. And we can't wait for you to join us.
So come check us out at geek2geekmedia.com.
And escape toxic fandom for something much more...
Keanu?
Yes, Keanu.